Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly podcast. We provide perspectives on leadership. Today, we're excited to welcome back Liz Wiseman. So Liz is a friend and a colleague, and was with us in 2015, which seems like a long time ago. Really a treat to have you back. So thank you for being here.
Well, it's good to be here. Like I was back when life was easy.
Yeah,
life 2015.
Easier, for sure. Let me tell you a little bit about Liz. She's a researcher and executive advisor who teaches leadership to executives around the world. She is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter. And I'll say that I give that your article to every client we have. So it's a great, great concept and a great book. She also wrote The Multiplier Effect, Tapping the Genius Inside Our Schools, 2 Wall Street Journal bestsellers, Rookie Smarts, Why Learning Beats Knowing in the New Game of Work, and her new book that we're going to talk about today, Impact Players, How to Take the Lead, Play Bigger, and Multiply Your Impact. She's the CEO of the Wiseman Group, a leadership research and development firm headquartered in Silicon Valley. Some of her recent clients include Apple, AT&T, Disney, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Nike, Salesforce, Tesla, and Twitter. Liz has conducted significant research in the field of leadership and collective intelligence and writes for the Harvard Business Review, Fortune, and a variety of other businesses and leadership journals. She is a frequent guest lecturer at BYU, and that's your alma mater, right?
Yes.
Yes. And Stanford University, and as a former executive at Oracle, which is where I got to know Liz. She worked there as a vice president of Oracle University as a global leader for human resource development. A lot to talk about. So I just read your bio, which is obviously super prolific. But what I want to start with is, you know, how did you decide to write this particular book? You obviously saw something in the market. Obviously, you started probably thinking about this before the pandemic. So tell us a little bit about how that all came together. Yeah.
Well, there's the noble answer to this question, and then there's the truth. What do you want?
Both.
Well, there is a little bit of noble intent, is that I think it's a piece of work that will help people get more out of work. And we can talk more about that. I really do think it will create a better work experience for people. Now, here's the part that's sort of the true reason. So, I want to back up just a little bit on the journey so you understand some context, and what I'm going to give is a fairly truthful answer, because the truth is I was bored. That's why I wrote the book. And, you know, when I wrote Multipliers, somebody said, I don't know, it was like maybe a year after the book came out, and the book had been shared and it had been useful. And somebody said, wow, it must feel so good to have made this contribution to your profession.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
I'm like, wow, I had never thought of it that way. Like, I wasn't trying to make a contribution. I just had a question I didn't have an answer to. And Ray Lane, the former president of Oracle, once referred to me as a dog on a bone. He's like, you are a dog on a bone. Like, you do not let go of things. And I don't think he meant like lack of forgiveness, but it was just like,
you meant it in a good way.
in a good, but annoying way. Which is like, you persist, like you personify grit.
Yeah.
And so with Multipliers, I really had this question, like, why is it that some leaders seem to amplify intelligence and make everyone smarter, and other people seem to suck the life out of a team and out of a room? And I'm just a dog on a bone, like trying to figure out an answer to this. I wasn't trying to do anything noble. I just like had this dogged curiosity. And
sure.
And so that's usually why I get up enough like oomph to write a book. I just want to know, or I'm bored. And in this case, I was a little bit bored. And it wasn't that I didn't have things to do. I just was like, I don't know, twiddling my thumbs. Yeah. Like, what's next? And there's a couple things that really like get me. And one is I get bored having answers to things.
Yeah. You want to learn. Yeah. You're a learner.
Yeah. And I'm like out there teaching the whole same things. And you get into this mode where you're like, it's the same questions and I feel like I have the same answers. And then I also get, you know, like bored of not having an answer. And this is really what drove this book is I know a lot about what it takes for leaders to create an environment where people can contribute at their best. Like that, I feel like I know a lot about. But what I didn't know a lot about was, what does it take for individuals? Like what's the mindset and the practices that individuals need to bring to this? And there was this moment of, I don't know if it was a prompt truth, but it was, I was teaching a workshop at Salesforce, a place probably that you spent some time to. And, you know, I'm teaching about how to be a multiplier leader, and someone in the workshop, you know, raises his hand, and I could tell he's agitated about something. He's like, yeah.
What else?
I want to be a multiplier leader. Got it. But you can't multiply zero. I'm like,
hey, that's good. Yeah, you can't. The math doesn't work.
Well, and I'm like in horror at first, because I think what he's saying is I got a bunch of ding-a-lings working on my team and I can't do anything with that, because I was looking at this lens of intelligence, and I was about to, like, you know, like burst into my speech about, you know, hey, not everyone's a genius. I get it. But everyone brings intelligence and capability, and your job as a leader is to multiply that, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, no, like my job, I have to have a certain like approach and mindset to bring out the best of people, but people have to show up with the right mindsets and practices. Mm-hmm. Too. I'm like, oh, well, that's interesting. And what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And I got tired of like encountering that situation and not knowing what that looked like.
Okay.
I go into dog on a bone mode.
And so tell us a little bit about this book, and like, how did you differ? Cause you know, you've got many books and you're so prolific in that. How did you differentiate impact player particularly?
Well, you know, my friend Scott Miller at Franklin Covey, he said it is like, you know what, if you're a leader, read multipliers. If you're a leader and you want to like get the most out of your team, like read impact players and then share it with your team members. That's kind of, mm-hmm. I thought that was a very simple way to look at it, which is the book Impact Players is about the impact players of the work. So, you know, we're familiar with this term from sports.
Yeah, I was going to say, you picked that up from sports. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And it's not because I'm a massive sports fan or athlete. It's just like it's so clear the impact players on a team. These are right. These standout contributors. They're talented. They're capable. They, you know, make this amazing contribution, but they also change the team culture. And people play better because there's this impact player on your team. You're like, you know what? We actually stand a chance of doing well because we've got this force on our team. And, you know, in some ways they're multipliers to the team's
capability. Oh, yeah. I mean, and you can just teach, if we could look at the sports in the Bay Area, I mean, you've got Buster Posey, who is the consummate impact player. It doesn't say much, but because of the way he's plays and the way when he does say things, they're so impactful. And it's going to be a big loss to the Giants. I mean, he's bad, yeah, but I mean, it's his leadership that's going to be the biggest loss. And then you got Stephen Curry, of course, who, I mean, you know, consummate impact player. I love the fact you use sports. I mean, I'm a big sports person, so I was like really happy to see that.
And I love that you bring up Steph Curry. We were just watching the Warriors game, and one of my friends told me, she said, oh yeah, you know, because I've always thought of like Steph Curry as this big shooter, this point scorer. And then she said, oh, actually,
not lately, though. He's had a problem lately, but go ahead.
But that's how always have I've seen him.
Yes, definitely.
And she said they actually have the statistics to show that other people play better when he is out on the court, is that they score more points.
Yes.
And that is what an impact player really is. So they're these standout contributors that make teams better. We see it out in the sports world, but they also exist in the work world. And I wanted to know like how they think and how they work. And that's really what the book is about. What is their mindset? What makes them tick? What do they do differently than other people? And what I'm always fascinated in is what are like the small, seemingly insignificant differences in how people approach their work that end up creating this enormous kind of impact and this difference. And, you know, there's two ways to look at the book. One is, how can we get people to work so that they create more value for the team and the company? You can look, and you could actually read the whole book with this lens. There's another lens to read this book in, which is, how do I approach my work so that it creates more joy and satisfaction for me?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's one of the things we saw with these high impact contributors is that they bring extraordinary value to the organization, to their mm-hmm. manager, they're service oriented, but it all comes back to them, mm-hmm. you know, maybe in terms of like remuneration and promotion and recognition, but also just this kind of satisfaction of knowing you're doing work that really matters, that right. it's making a difference, that you've built influence and power mm-hmm. and impact. And it's kind of a good way to work.
Okay. So let's break it down a little bit. First of all, let me ask you one more question. When did you finish the book? Like, I want to know the time frame.
Oh, so I sent off the manuscript about a year ago. So March.
Okay, so, all right. So you had a year of COVID. Okay. All right. So there was.
Definitely.
Yeah. That had. All right. That's going to color my questions. All right. So let's speak a little bit about what is an impact player? Like, what are the five practices of impact player? And then we can then apply that to what we're all going through right now. Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, I want to start if I can with kind of what we're all going through right now,
because okay.
So what I did is, you know, I interviewed 170 managers and okay. looked at how do these people think and how is it differently than, and this is probably the most important thing if someone's going to read the book or try to get value from it. It's, I'm not comparing high performers and low performers. This is like high impact versus rock solid contributor. So we're looking for like the thin slices of difference between good and great. And so we're kind of building this model, and I could see what mindsets and practices differentiated impact players from, we'll call them ordinary contributors. And as I looked at it, it wasn't even, what was interesting wasn't the difference in behavior, it was the situations that differentiated them. Because here's how managers described these ordinary contributors, sort of in aggregate, again, across 170 data points, is they were, they took ownership. They did their job. They did their job extremely well. They were talented. They were smart. They were hardworking. They followed direction. They carried their weight on teams. They were focused. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well,
that's all good.
That's all good. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with that? Like, if you offer me a resume or a hire with that profile, I'm going to take it. And what was fascinating is that these ordinary contributors were stellar in ordinary times. So let's get to the COVID thing. It's like I remember I was on a plane when I just kept pouring through this behavioral data that I had and the situations that seemed to differentiate them. And it popped out to me. I'm like, wow, as I kept clustering them, there were these five situations that the impact players handled very differently. Mm-hmm. than other people. And they are messy problems when it's not his job, her job. It's not that department's charter. It's not this. It's like, it just kind of is out in no man's land, but it's important.
Right.
And in that situation, what most people do is they do their job. Like, oh, here's my piece of that. And I'll do my part. Whereas the impact players tend to do the job that needs to be done. They have a healthy disrespect for their job description. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, my job description is like base camp. It's like where I hang out and do my work, but I'm really here so that when I spot problems, I can go after those.
Right. That's a really good description. And especially obviously apropos right now, still.
Yeah, because like whose job is it to clean up the mess that COVID has created? Like whose job is it to solve that problem? Well, mm-hmm. that was nobody's job. You know, now all we're suddenly public health officials. And you know, the second was unclear roles where, you know, we're mm-hmm. clearly moving to a very collaborative workplace, but we still need to know like, well, who's in charge of this initiative or this meeting where we have these constant leadership vacuums. And what most people do, I hear it all the time from my friends in the corporate world is like, well, roles are unclear. And like, I need role clarification. We need role clarification. We need someone to come in and tell us who's right. in charge of what. Impact players aren't waiting for this. They're just stepping in and saying, well, you know what? If it's unclear, would it be helpful if I took the lead on this? Yes, please.
Yeah, this is great. Love
but it. They don't need to always be the boss. They can step in and lead a meeting or initiative, but when their work is done, they can step back, mm-hmm. you know, into their like rightful slot in the org chart or what have you. And they're as willing to follow other people's lead as they are their own.
And you describe some of that as the win, what's important now. Right. I like that. The W-I-N metaphor.
Yeah, it was sort of an accidental acronym. I usually don't like those metaphors. In fact, my editor, she sees that. And she's like, I usually hate these little acronyms, but I really like this. It's like they have this sense of like, here's my job and here's my base role, but I'm constantly scanning for the win. What's important right now, and how do I channel my energy on what's important, and how do I step up and lead where I can play an important role but step back? You know, the third,
I like it,
is how they deal with unforeseen obstacles. That requires no definition, of course. And you know, and this was the thing, like one of these little nuances that I think has a lot of meaning is that most of these solid contributors, they took ownership. They were responsible for things. They're like, I got it. I own it. But when they encountered the unreasonable obstacle out of my hands, out of my control, above my pay grade, what our default behavior is to escalate that up. Like, okay, let me hand this to the higher ups. And the impact players just handed it off. They kept ownership, got it over the finish line, but they didn't do it solo, as in I'm going to heroically handle all these things that are out of my control.
Right.
They were coordinating the response. So rather than like escalate to the SVP, they're reaching out to the SVP saying, hey, I'm on this, but I need your help. Like, can I pull you in? I need 10 minutes from you. I need an approval from you. But they don't do the handoff.
So most of what you're seeing so far to me sounds like just taking initiative and not just taking it in for the sake of taking it, but doing it in most relevant, as the win, I love the win, what's important now in the most relevant situations.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, taking initiative, there's a lot of people who would take initiative who honestly really annoy me. See, admit it, like it's got to annoy you too, where someone's like, hey, this is what I want. Like, give me this, put me in, coach.
Yeah.
Because they're pursuing their agenda.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's for the, exactly right.
And the impact player is taking that initiative, like put me in, coach, but they understand the moment. They're like, I will do the job. I will help the team secure the win, but this is not showboating. And
right.
So it's initiative aimed at what's in service to the organization.
Right. Now, you've not played sports in your life?
Oh no, I've played sports. Oh, I just don't play them particularly well. Like,
Okay. Cause just so much of what you're saying is good players and leaders, you know, captains and leaders taking advantage of the moment. So it resonates a lot. Well, I'm sure with people. Yeah.
And, you know, and I've played some sports and been on teams, but I've also been, you know, a 4X mom, you know, like four-time mom. And I've been to a lot of games. And like, there's this one moment, this is like you tossed your kid under the bus just a little bit in this example here, but you know, I remember one of my daughters, like her coach said, man, that girl, this is, she's playing soccer. She's like a one woman wrecking crew. And like, she would just like blast through everyone. And that's kind of what that initiative looks like without being aware of what's going on, versus like that same initiative, but total awareness and ability to read the field and know what does my team need from me right now?
Right, right.
Yeah. And maybe it's for me to drop back and let somebody else drive to the goal.
Yep. Yep. Okay, great. So, okay. So we're on four.
Oh, four moving targets. Like the market's changing, the situation's changing. Like we started the project, and how many times do we encounter this? I started the project with one objective, but it keeps morphing on me. It's changing and I can't pin down what we're trying to accomplish when the targets are moving. And, you know, what the ordinary contributor does is they try to manage and minimize that change. Like, okay, let's see if we can get this thing, let's pin it to the wall so we can shoot at this target. And the impact players are saying, okay, target's changed. Let me change with it. And the image that I get with this one is like this idea that you finish a day of work, you go to sleep, you sleep for 8 hours. So it's a fantasy situation. You know, you wake up the next morning and you just assume that while you were sleeping, the world changed, that your world changed, that this project you were working on, you can't just pick it up and carry on with it. You probably have to like check in, like what's happened? Like you wake up expecting things to have changed on you.
Yeah. That's awesome. You expect it. You expect the uncertainty.
And I think that, Sue, I think you nailed one of the themes across this is that the impact player, and really it's the mindset that allows us to have a lot of impact is when we just normalize problems.
Yeah.
You expect them. You're not trying to like avoid them. You're like, my job is to solve problems. I will have problems. This will be hard. This will change on us.
Mm-hmm.
This is our reality, you know, and the last difference is how they deal with just unrelenting demands. When workload just feels heavy, you know, most people are looking for help, which ends up adding to the burden that managers and their colleagues are already feeling. They're sort of high maintenance, like, here's what I need. And the impact player is finding a way to just make work light for everyone. Like this, it was this word that just kept coming up in all these interviews. It's like they were easy, not easy going,
I wouldn't think so. Yeah. They're trying to make things easier.
They just made things easier. Like if they're going to forward. So I like to think in very practical terms on this, you know, if they're going to forward a long email chain where it's like, everyone's been weighing in on this and they forward it to their colleague or their boss, they wouldn't dare forward it and say, what do you think?
Yeah,
or your thoughts, ? Which then creates this burden like, okay, great. Now I have to read that whole thing. They will have summarized it saying, this email chain, you know, we're debating these two issues. We need to decide if A or B, I think we should do A, you know, do you agree? Or like they're making themselves easy.
Mm-hmm. I love
to work with. They're low maintenance. They're like these cars that just go, but don't require this like constant trip to the shop.
Right. Okay. I love it. Okay. So let's take these. They're all amazing. And let's apply it to what you've noticed in just in general, how we're really most of tech. I'm going to just focus on tech right now. Most of tech is still remote. I mean, we keep saying the hybrid, but there's, you know, we keep saying we're going to go back and we're not going back yet. And it's been 2 years now. I think people getting used to being at home. So how are these practices that you just outlined, how does an impact player have as much impact being remote as they would in the office?
Well, I think it starts with like, and kind of what does the impact player mindset do with our current reality is these five situations, and there are probably a few more, but these were the biggies. This is the reality of the modern workplace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these aren't the exceptions. These are now the rules. Mm-hmm. Like these are the situations to master. Like in some ways, when you write a book like this, you think, oh, I'm trying to advocate for a set of mindsets and behaviors. And in some ways, what I'm really advocating for is, you know what? These are the situations to gain mastery of, like know how to deal with messy problems. You know how to respond when you see a leadership vacuum or roles are unclear. If you want to hire people with these kind of capabilities, hire people who are adept at these kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and what does this look like in the remote world? You know, the remote world is just generating more and more of these kinds of problems. Can I just rant a little bit for the problems created by the remote world?
Yes.
So let's think about like the problems generated. And this would be a great thing for people who are logged on to add to. So it creates a whole set of messy problems. It also creates, I'm going to do this in no particular order, just the order they come in my head. It creates social isolation. Okay. I was just listening to a book this morning, See No Stranger, I think is what it's called, talked about technically, if a prisoner is in solitary confinement for 15 days, it's equivalent to torture. So it like now raises that to an experience of torture. I'm like, 15 days in solitary confinement, like we're way beyond that. Like there's a lot of people who are like, oh yeah, I passed the 15 day mark all by myself a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so we're coming out of this experience where our community structures are being broken down. I'm out for a walk in the morning and I'm like, oh yeah, those are my neighbors. I remember once talking to them, knowing them, sharing like bread with them. And it's happening in our workplace. And, you know, the impact player is building community, is building belonging. Connection. They're making hard things feel light for everyone. There's this one story in the book about Sue Warnke and a woman named Lynn at Salesforce that just is emblematic of what this kind of community looks like. It's acknowledging that, you know what, everyone's going through hard stuff. Let's not add to this phantom workload. Being remote, I think some of the most insidious problems is it's really, really easy for a lot of would-be impact players to go missing.
Mm-hmm.
That the loudest person is the one who gets attention. And I think there's, it's so easy for people to get off their game because they're not getting all of those subtext messages about what's important. They're like, oh, I'm just doing my work. And they don't look up to realize, wow, the priorities are shifted and you missed that conversation. It's all that hallway connective tissue that we get when we're in person. And so it's so easy to miss the mark right now. And it's really easy for some people more than others to go unseen.
Well, and it takes more effort. I mean, an impact player would have to have more effort to connect. You can't just sit around in your house. You have to make an effort to do extra calls or connect on Slack or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of different, or say, hey, let's go for a walk. It's safe to go for a walk in the park, even now.
Yeah.
But it takes initiative. You can't just sit around.
Yeah.
This is everything you say, it comes back to taking initiative.
It does. It was fun. My young son, my youngest, who's just started his freshman year at college, he said his word for this year, it was kind of a new thing. He said, Mom, do you know people like come up with words to like, instead of New Year's resolutions, like New Year words. Yeah, he says, mine's going to be proactive.
Oh, good.
And, you know, he's an introvert who's gone off to college with his last year and a half of high school, like from his bedroom and from his bed and, you know, hasn't really reached out to people. So yeah, it's really easy to get isolated. It's really easy for people who aren't in a dominant demographic group to go unseen. It's really easy for people who do work in the behind the scenes to be missing, for their managers not to see the value of their contribution. And I think one of the things that we don't really talk about a lot is that working remote breaks chains of impact and consequence. So let's say I am a financial analyst and I do a piece of work and an analysis and I send it off to my boss or my client internally. And then, you know, they go and do something with it. Now, if I'm working in the office, someone might say, oh, hey, you know what, Liz, you know that analysis you did? It was actually really useful because we were in this meeting. We had to decide if we're going to invest in A or B, and we decided to invest in B because of your analysis. Like, hey, atta girl. Whereas if I send it in over email, I upload it to Box.
Like, it goes to black hole. Yeah.
It's a black hole. And managers right now, like I had to plead with managers, it's help people see how their work has impact because we're losing it. We're losing touch with it.
I love when you said people need to be seen. It's like, and that again, takes effort. It takes extra effort to get on their calendars. It takes effort to follow up on with a phone call after a group meeting. We have clients who will jump on Slack real quick after, or pick up the phone and I call it lingering, linger after. Or linger before, you know, get on early. No one ever gets on Zoom early. So let's assume they're going to stay on for a little extra time after. Stop the meeting early.
Mm-hmm.
So you can linger.
And the efficiency of online meetings and connections allows us to concatenate all of these interactions and work and not have that white space, that down space, that's lingering, to kind of cleanse the palate.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're just on to the next one. You're right. It's really, you're exhausted. When I'm on Zoom for 5, 6, 7 meetings, which I rarely do, this is what our clients are doing every day. They're doing 7, 8, 9 meetings every day. And I don't even know how that even happens. Like there's such an exhaustion of just having to be up.
Yeah. And it seems great. It's like Disneyland with the fast pass. Or the VIP pass, which I once got because I did some work for Disney, and you can hop from ride to ride to ride, and you're like, this is great. This is so efficient. Woo. And then at the end of the day, which is what did you like? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just like catatonic here. I it was so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's happening is we're not getting that reflection
right.
and lingering and connection.
Yeah.
Because we're so efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So this is great. Everybody, you're welcome to jump in here and ask Liz questions or make a comment. We've talked a lot about many things, messy problems, unclear roles, dealing with unseen obstacles, moving targets, and unrelenting demands. Those are the five practices. You can comment on those, or you can just ask anything. Jim, you're on first. Go ahead.
I think it was a great book, and I worked for a company called Drift. We're big into like books and stuff, and so we read a lot of books. And I think it was great. It was very like direct and really relative to a lot of what's going on. The one comment I would also have, and I liked all your comments around impact players, is I think the other thing that we have seen is the impact players then drive other impact players underneath them, other people underneath them to become impact players, mm-hmm. because in fact, they are take on these special projects, and therefore they have to push some of the stuff that's on their plate down to other people. And I think that is another important characteristic of how to develop people in an organization.
Absolutely. Stephens, assist. Go ahead.
Yeah, that, you know, we often think, oh, development happens and that coaching happens between the manager and the team member, but that peer-based modeling, coaching, mentoring, like, hey, let me give you some of my, what's on my plate and help you be successful. I think it's a much more powerful form of learning. I agree with you.
Cool. All right, who is next? Carrie, you have a comment?
Question. Hi.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Liz. I just have your new one on order and love multipliers. I recommend it all the time. I specialize in women's leadership, and obviously we've all seen the issues that have happened with women over the pandemic. And what I'm curious about, because this really describes a lot of my high-powered A-type clients, and a lot of them are getting burnout because they take on too much. Mm-hmm. So how do you balance that?
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing up this topic of burnout, of workload. I think there's an important distinction between doing more work versus doing harder work. And what tends to generate burnout is when we have too much of the same type of work and we feel like we're turning a crank. In fact, this turning a crank was in some ways the metaphor that I would choose for people who were stuck in this contributor mindset, which is like, I'm doing my job, I'm turning the crank, you know, more work and giving someone more work and being constantly taking on more work can lead to burnout. But what actually is the antidote to burnout, in my perspective, is doing harder work, not more work. You know, work that is inherently challenging, work like that taps into like, oh, I don't know how to do that. And so I think it's easy for us to look at burnout and say, burnout is a function of too much work. Let's take our foot off the accelerator. Let's take time off. Let's, you know, take sabbaticals. Let's do a 4-day work week. And those are great. They provide temporary relief, but they don't actually address burnout. And I think if we really want to address burnout, it's helping people see the impact of their work. Now, you know, being a working woman, I think working women and mothers are amazing and they can do incredible things. And what we need is we need challenges that we put our energy behind rather than like energy that just spins in this cycle. And so some of this is time-based and we need to figure out how to let women who are now doing more roles than they reasonably can. Like the answer isn't just to go easy on them, because I think what we'll do is leave these women in a cycle of under contribution for a long period of time. So I think we have to be wise to say, actually, what we need is deeper engagement, not just a lighter workload. Yeah. This is a more complicated topic than something we can address quickly, but it's actually one that's close to my heart. And I have a number of women on my team who during the pandemic were like, I'm out. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I can't homeschool 3 boys and do this work. And so I've been experiencing this firsthand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie. Good to see you.
Thanks. You too.
Yeah. Richard, you have a question or a comment?
Hi. Question. Hi, Sue. And hi, Liz. Thanks for the discussion. I'm curious about your 5 characteristics and whether you have an opinion or a hypothesis or even have done any research into whether they are more innate or more learnable. And if the latter, whether you have some hypotheses on how best leaders can learn those types of impact behaviors.
Thank you for that question. And I do. And I would say I have a hypothesis, not a conclusion on this. So I come from the world of learning and development, and I am a natural born optimist, like kind of too many, a couple extra helpings of can do attitude. And so my first reaction as I'm going through this is, oh yeah, I'm going to like decompose what impact players do and what they think. And then I'm going to write about it so that everyone can learn to do this. And that's right. My sunny optimism at work. And, you know, somewhere in that process, I'm like, oh yeah, some of these are not that easy to learn. And so there's a little piece of extra research that my team and I did was going through, once we knew here's what this looks like, is to stratify which of these are the least coachable and which are the most coachable. Now, I don't think there's anything in there that I would say is unlearnable. But like, let's say, you know, some of them, like if you go to the root of some of these practices and mindsets, it comes down to like internal locus of control.
Yeah.
Like how sense of your agency. And these are things that get built into us pretty early in life, like formative experiences in the workplace, in our families, and they can be altered, but that's hard work. So there's a little section in the book, and it's right at the end. If you wrote to info@thewisemangroup.com, we would just send it to you, but it's right here on page 239. It looks like this. I took all of the different mindsets and practices and put them into three buckets: least coachable, relatively coachable, most coachable. That was based on surveying, you know, the Marshall Goldsmith 100 coaches. So kind of a global population of coaches, and said, if you have experience coaching these, what has been your experience in like the act of coaching itself? And that's what it's based on. So I think it's interesting, but I would see this as very much tentative and a hypothesis. Like, and one of the things that we're doing is we're going to,
I wonder what the impact players themselves would say.
You know, part of the research is we went and I did a double click interview with the 25 of these impact players. Mm-hmm. And like, where did you learn how to do this?
Yeah.
Like, and like, I'm trying to trace it back to how early did this happen? And a lot of it was kind of, I learned it at my mother's knee. Like, oh, my dad always encouraged me. He told me, you know what, I should always be my own boss. You know, she now works at Google and works for, you know, Cargo, like these big companies. But she always said, like, no, I was taught to be my own boss.
Which one's the hardest?
Okay, now I got to go back to that.
What page is it?
Well, okay, so it's on page 239. And okay, the least coachable are internal locus of control. I think that is very, very difficult. Like when you get a colleague, a employee, a friend who's stuck in a victim mindset, which is kind of the opposite of internal locus control, is other people are doing these things to me.
Right.
Like, think about how hard it is to help that friend see a different reality.
Yeah, it's tough. And which one is internal locus control with the practices? Which one is that related to? I mean, it's related to all of them, but
it kind of sits underneath all of them, but it's right. Very, it drives do the job that's needed rather than do your job, because yeah. She's like, oh yeah, no, I have the power, step up and lead. Yeah. Oh, I don't need to have formal authority. Like I can act for myself.
Okay.
You know, another one that shows up as really hard to coach is what I call this opportunity lens on things, which is, do I see ambiguity as a threat? Or do I see ambiguity and uncertainty as an opportunity for me to shape? Like, you know, someone with an opportunity lens is like, oh yeah, like, it's not clear what we should do. There are no rules here. We're completely off the rails. This is a problem. Versus someone who's like, well, yeah, but nobody's telling us what we can't do either. So therefore we have like power to go in and do it. Like, let's take this sort of chaos scene and use it as an opportunity to advance our cause, our That shows sense. Up as harder to coach, which frustrates me because I want that to be easy to learn how to do.
Well, I think that both of those have to do with this idea of, you know, how you deal with uncertainty. And I go back to, I keep going back to that. And like, what is your, as a leader, like, how do you deal with things that come up you don't expect? And so what I try to do for myself, especially raising a teenager, is just expect, and you've been through this now four times, and I didn't realize your last one was already at college. That's amazing. Is that you just expected stuff to happen. You just expect them to be in bad moods and expect things that with COVID that you didn't expect. And that when that happens, you're not going to freak out as much.
Yeah.
So, and the question is, where do you learn that? I mean, some of it you learn because it's happened to you, you know, from experience.
Yeah.
But some of it is a very positive, like you can always get over something. I mean, that is a locus of control. That's locus of control. You can always get over something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we have to look at the broad stripes on this, which is what we people of my generation have done to the youth who are now entering into the workforce, because we've done some great things and we've done some disservice. Like, I think we were sort of raised a generation to say, hey, you can do anything you want, but, you know, like take charge, show initiative, like contact the CEO, make stuff happen, start a company. But we've also created this soft messaging that says life should be easy, because a whole generation of parents said, oh, my job is to like clear obstacles for you and, you know, make it easy for you to get into college, to get a good grade. Hey, I packed your lunch. Hey, I went ahead and took the liberty of like, we've created ease for our kids.
Yes,
and
for sure.
It's contrary to, I think the reality is, oh, by the way, it's hard. Like college will be hard. You will get grades that disappoint you. Life is hard. And
good point.
How do we undo some of what we think we've done to mm-hmm. young people who are entering the workforce?
Yeah, it's a great point. Richard, I just wanted to say thank you for your question. So any last thoughts in terms of how we can, as managers and coaches, how we can teach, guide? You know, I like the idea of giving, you know, guidance rather than feedback. I like that part of what you said in your book. This is about guidance.
Yeah, it's giving people information that they need. Like, I feel like we just need to demystify the whole feedback world and maybe even accept that people aren't going to be good at giving it and people aren't going to be good at receiving it. Like feedback, like makes us all itchy, but like instead be dispensers of information.
Yeah.
Like, wow, here's the information you need to know what's important. Here's the information you need to know how that session went. It's like, instead of, you know, causing people to sort of work without sight and vision and intel, it's just like open that up and give people information they need to be successful.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, I just simplified it down to what's worked and what's working and what's not working.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's all practical and let's move on. And I agree with you. Demystifying feedback is a, we'll talk about that next time. So I
want nobody wants feedback. Nobody wants advice either.
No.
Even my mom, she turned 80 this week and she came bursting into my house on Sunday. And she's like, I love being 80. I feel wise. Do you want some life advice? And I literally just knee jerk said, no, I don't. And she was so disappointed, terrible daughter. But I was like, no, because like, who wants unsolicited advice? Not even me from my 80-year-old mom. Like,
awesome. We'll end on that. I love it. So everybody, you can get a hold of Liz through LinkedIn, of course, and you can go on her website, wisemangroup.com. The book is Impact Players, How to Take the Lead, Play Bigger, and Multiply Your Impact. So again, just thank you so much for being with us. I love your stories and your metaphors. And so thanks again for starting us out this year with such an impactful, insightful set of ideas. And as always, I appreciate you very much.
Oh, thank you. And so keep doing all that work that you do.
Okay. Thanks, Liz. Thank Bye, you. Everybody.